This NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, we're going to take a look at how Australia banned some rifles capable of automatic fire, and what resulted was a lower murder rate in that country and far fewer mass killings. But first up, the Capital Steps Comedy Group will be at the Palladium in St. Petersburg this Sunday night at 7 o'clock. The Cap Steps use satire as a way to skewer the high and mighty. No politician or public figure is safe from their use of songs that we love to point out hypocrisy and hubris. On this tour, the Capital Steps are making their only Tampa Bay appearance at the Palladium with a new show of music and political comedy. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat, a snowflake or a deplorable, neither side is safe from the group that puts the mock in democracy. And we're going to listen to some of the work of the Capital Steps, and then we'll be joined by Elena Newport, the founder of the Capital Steps. Here's a song from their from the Capital Steps that they did about O.J. Simpson. As you know, O.J. Simpson, the former football player, was just released from prison, and it's likely he may soon move to Florida. That's caused a controversy with our own Attorney General Pam Bondi, who says that O.J. should not be allowed to move to Florida. Well, here is a song about O.J. Simpson, done by the Capital Steps.
Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to my neighborhood. I'd like to tell you a little story about my neighborhood and some of the houses there. This is the house O.J. built. Mm-hmm. This is the yuppie who followed the puppy who somebody saw got stuff on his paw outside of the house O.J. built. You see, it's like a story. This is the sleuth who discovered the truth with the help of a trooper who came with a scooper right after the yuppie who followed the puppy who somebody saw got stuff on his paw outside of the house O.J. built. Do you see how it rhymes? This cute prosecutor would sure like to neuter this overpaid lawyer. A Hollywood warrior whose legal attacks would exclude all the facts that were found by the sleuth who discovered the truth with the help of a trooper who came with a scooper right after the yuppie who followed the puppy who somebody saw got stuff on his paw outside of the house O.J. built. Do you see how we're building to a shuddering climactic ending? Can you say bolero? Your mommy and daddy will explain that to you. This is the prison where his future isn't. O.J. will get zero because he was a hero who carried a ball each September through fall, entertaining the twit who will vote to acquit. And call such a fury as part of the jury consisting of guys who had not set their eyes nor chased with the car, but the cops and the star who insisted he often spent evenings at Gotham when he tried to recap the scars on his kneecap and physical fitness. A last-minute witness made Miss Prosecutor again want to neuter this overpaid lawyer, a Hollywood warrior whose legal attacks would scoot all the facts were found the sleuth and discovered the truth with the help of a trooper who came with the scooper who after the yuppie followed the puppy, somebody saw get stuff in his paws out of the house O.J. built.
Well, that's an example of some of the comedy of the Capital Steps. They're going to be in St. Petersburg this Sunday night at 7 o'clock at the Palladium. We're still trying to reach Elena Newport, the founder of the Capital Steps. Let's listen to another track from the Capital Steps. This is the Hillary Clinton Donald Trump comedy Def Jam from the Capital Steps.
Good evening.
evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Rachel Maddow. And I'm here tonight because, first of all, I think we can all agree that this latest presidential election was extremely contentious, don't you think? So, in an effort to bring the country back together and inject a little humor into the proceedings, we have decided to hold a joke-telling contest featuring the two former presidential contenders. So please help me welcome former Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. And President Donald J. Trump. All right. As I said, we're going to have a joke-telling contest tonight, and to determine who goes first, I am going to toss a coin.
Oh, good. I always win those.
It's obviously rigged.
All right, we'll just dispense with a coin toss, and President Trump, you will be up first. President Trump, please, tell our audience, why did the chicken cross the road?
I think it's obvious why the chicken crossed the road. The chicken crossed the road because there was no wall. There was no wall to stop the chickens. Chickens just come into this country willy-nilly. They just bok bok bagok across our borders. And they are taking the jobs of hardworking American chickens. It's gonna stop, folks. I am gonna make it stop. And if for some reason I can't do it by myself, maybe the Second Amendment people, huh? I'm not saying they should shoot the chickens, but that's exactly what I'm saying.
All right, Secretary Clinton, why did the chicken cross the road?
Well, I've had one position on this chicken all along. Did the chicken cross the road? Yes. Did it get to the other side? No. Do we know why the chicken crossed the road? Yes. Do we know why it never made it to the other side? No. So I don't think I can be any clearer than that.
President Trump, you have 30 seconds for a rebuttal.
Hillary Clinton hates chickens. She hates all chickens. Hillary Clinton is not a friend to the chicken American community. Hillary Clinton is the founder of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Many people say that. Many people say it all the time, so it must be true. I love birds. I love people who love birds. I have friends who own birds. I have friends who own the Baltimore Orioles, the Atlanta Hawks.
Okay, Secretary Clinton, you also have 30 seconds to rebut.
Well, maybe this bird was trying to cross the road because he was afraid to release his tax returns. Maybe this bird's just trying to get to the Cayman Islands.
Wrong.
Or maybe the bird isn't even paying any taxes.
That would make the bird smart.
All right, we're going to wrap this up with one more joke, okay? Okay. All right, President Trump. President Trump, how many Democrats does it take to change a light bulb?
They would all try, but they would all fail. The American people knew Hillary Clinton didn't have the stamina to change a light bulb. I do. I know everything about light bulbs. Nobody knows more about light bulbs than I. You could say I'm a professor of bulbology. My knowledge is bulbous. Because I learned everything at Trump University.
All right, Secretary Clinton. How many Republicans does it take to change a light bulb?
Well, I think this is a trick question. Because all the Republicans I know would never change a light bulb. They prefer to live in the dark.
That wraps it up for us, and I declare the winner of this contest to be anybody out there who's watching something else. Thank you. Good night.
That's the Capital Steps, and they're portrayal of the comedy Def Jam featuring Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And joining us right now is the founder of the Capitol Steps, Elena Newport. Hey, Elena, how are you?
Hey, fine. We're coming your way.
All right. Well, I can't wait to see you guys. So it's interesting in that bit that we just heard how, everybody knows that Hillary has no sense of humor and Donald has no sense of humor. And you just, like, send them up perfectly.
to tell jokes, right. What would it be like if Hillary and Donald tried to tell jokes, right?
So how do you find actors that can portray the voices so well?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We have auditions whenever we have an opening, which isn't too often because it's fun being in the Capitol Steps. But we will call people in and we'll, like, you know, they will come prepared with a beautiful ballad to sing or, whatever. And then I'll say, okay, now you sang that song very nicely. Now sing it like Kim Jong-un would sing it. And that's what our auditions are like. And somebody would be like, how can I possibly sing like Kim Jong-un? But they realize that when they join the Capitol Steps, they may have to do that.
So now the legend is that all of you are part-timers, that when your day job is congressional staffers. Is that true?
Well, it was when we started. I stayed on the Hill for 7 years when we started the Capitol Steps. I worked for Senator Percy, who was one of those moderate Republicans you never see in the wild anymore. And eventually they started to notice that we weren't showing up at our day jobs because we were going off and doing the Capitol Steps at night and on the weekends. And then it started to bleed into the weeks. So we had to kind of decide, okay, what is it, a serious political career or run off and join the circus? And so now the Capitol Steps are really pretty much all full-time, traveling around the country.
Now, when some of you were members of the congressional staff, did any of your bosses ever say to you, we don't like what you're doing?
Well, we thought that we would get that a lot. You know, we thought they would tell us to stop or fire us or both. But what we found was over the years that the politicians that we worked for kind of liked it and invited us to perform and wanted us to do impressions of them. And so that was one of the big surprises. The only senator who ever got mad was D'Amato from New York, Senator D'Amato, and he was known for his temper. And he came up to me after a show, and he was mad because we didn't have a song about him.
So we're talking with Elena Newport, the founder of the Capitol Steps, and the Capitol Steps Comedy Group will be at the Palladium in St. Petersburg this Sunday night. I want to play something from the new album. And this is Donald Trump singing about Mar-a-Lago. Let's just listen in on one of the latest pieces from the Capitol Steps.
Well, the White House is kind of a dump. It needs more class to appeal to Donald Trump. People now say I'm insane, 'cause when my work week ends, I jump on a plane. Now it's bugging you, say it's not right, but you can't tell Trump where he sleeps at night. When in D.C., I start to dread, I'm dreaming of a place I'd rather be instead. Wake me up in Mar-a-Lago, though it costs a lot, I just say YOLO. Wake me up at Mar-a-Lago, don't want to listen to folks asking why. Shake it up at Mar-a-Lago, costs way more money than GAO knows. Wake me up at Mar-a-Lago, you're financing each flight. On weekends I say bye. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, First Lady Melania Trump.
Hello, darling.
Hello, trophy. Would you like to give a speech to the American people?
Oh, yes. I have an original speech written by me. I was born a poor black child in Chicago. 4 scores and 7 years ago, a date that will leave an infamy. Okay. I had a dream.
Okay, okay, you're fired.
Well, thank you for voting for my husband, Barack Trump.
In Mar-a-Lago, I'll resume classified briefings in the dining room. Don't you like golf? You can watch me play.
I like New York. That's where I want. Stay. Don't wake me up before you go. I gotta travel back.
at Mar-a-Lago. It is the Winter White House with this guy. Wake me up.
So, lady, your folks have to know, I mean, the range of music that you pick up on and satirize, there's quite a range. You go from...
Yeah, it really is. And I always say, like, if you want to see Donald Trump sing a rock song and Bernie Sanders sing a show tune and Vladimir Putin dance shirtless, this is the show for you. You got to see the Capitol set. I should warn you, nudity, partial nudity.
Oh, no.
Vladimir Putin, because he doesn't like to wear a shirt.
Oh, good, good. Well, the impressions are dead on. I mean, the Donald and Melania there is priceless. So you know, how does it take a while for you to pick up on the president's cadence? Or, you know, I know that there have been some great actors in your troupe. George W. Bush, whoever did that, was really great. Al Gore has been great. Barack Obama was great with all the pauses and the uhs.
Right,
but
right.
How long does it take for them to pick up?
Well, it depends. Some people take a while. You know, Hillary was a little harder because it was kind of a flat Midwestern, but it wasn't like, you know, so distinctive. But Trump, you know, right away, it's kind of, you know, that voice is so distinctive. So it varies from character to character.
So how long has the Capitol steps been around?
Well, we started it in 1981. And as you mentioned, we were Senate staffers at the time. And I guess you know this story. We were trying to do the traditional... nativity play for our Christmas party, but we couldn't find three wise men or a virgin anywhere in the Congress. so we decided to do song parodies. It was the early days of Reagan, and it was fun time for parody because he had come from acting to politics, so we thought, we'll go the other way.
Well, the Reagan impressions were really good. The John McCain impressionist is pretty incredible. How many Capitol Steps troops are there? Is there just one, or do you have several of them?
Well, it's funny that you should talk about the impressions, because one of the things I should say is the number of people in the show. We only have 5 people in the show. So we do about 30 songs and skits. And we will go, like, so the woman who plays Hillary has to play Angela Merkel and Nancy Pelosi, and she's running off and on, changing her wigs and her accents and trying to remember, okay, what's next?
And what does Angela Merkel sound like?
Well, you know, we just exaggerate the German accent. We have no idea what she really sounds like. We just go over the top. See, a lot of our characters are cartoons. You know, you go over the top and, you know, back in the days of, you know, Ross Perot, we did the ears that were the size of a suitcase. And so, you know, people who've heard our songs on the radio, now when you come to see the show, you'll see that we have just ridiculous props, too.
Yeah, I wonder visually, what's it like? Because you can hear the audience laughing at the inside jokes as you listen to the pieces, because obviously the audience is seeing more than we're hearing.
Right, that's why you got to come to the show and see the live show, because, you know, you try to find a wig as bad as Donald Trump's or Bernie's hair. You know, you try. Our prop person has challenges all the time, but she comes up with stuff, and, you know, we always try to make it more ridiculous than it even is in real life.
So people can find out more about the Cap Steps at your website?
Yes, capsteps.com. And we will be at the Palladium on Sunday the 8th, as you mentioned, and looking forward to it. We actually love to come down and thank the people of Florida, because over the years, you've been very good to comedians.
I know. It is a weird state, isn't it? We're going to go out with a piece from the new album. What's the new album called?
Orange is the New Barack.
Orange is the New Barack. We're going to go out with a piece with Donald Trump again. We're beating up a little bit on Donald Trump, but there's a kind of a Nixon impression in here, too. This is from Orange is the New Barack. You want to tell us anything more about it?
Well, I do want to say, when you come to the live show, we'll get both sides. You know, the Democrats aren't keeping quiet either.
You're so equal opportunity offenders?
Right, exactly. So, but it's fun to play a Donald Trump song. So I don't know which one you're playing. Which is it?
We're going to hear it together. This is Elena Newport. She's the founder of the Capitol Steps, and it's the group that puts the mock back in democracy. And here is one of the tracks from their latest album. They're going to be at the Palladium in St. Petersburg this Sunday night at 7 o'clock. It's the only stop in this area for Florida, right?
Yeah, we're coming down. We're just special for you guys.
Okay. Well, Elena, thanks for coming on WMNF.
Well, glad to be on. Thanks.
All right. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Here's the Capitol Steps.
And now, give it up bigly for your president, Donald J. Trump.
Where do I start? First of all, I gotta say, I love this crowd. There's so many people in this crowd. Fake news would not tell you that there are so many people in this crowd. It's been nothing but success for me. As you know, I got us out of that nasty Paris Climate Accord. You're welcome. So the next time you're not eaten by a polar bear because they don't exist anymore, you can thank me. Also, if you've been watching the latest episodes of The Presidency, I had to fire James Comey. James Comey's a grandstander. He's a show-off, not an honest person. I had to fire James Comey. And all those hearings, he was talking about how he was uncomfortable being left alone in a room with me. This wasn't surprising. I've heard this many times before. Mostly from beauty pageant contestants. I suppose I have to acknowledge the allegations about Russia. I don't know anything about Russia. I didn't even know what Russia was. These are wrong allegations. It's sad, okay? I don't have any intelligence. On Russia. And if I know anything as the star of a former, you know, super awesome, mega successful reality TV show, it's that Americans don't care about intelligence. One of my top priorities has been fixing healthcare. Obamacare, it's a disaster. It's a disaster. It's exploding. Well, it's imploding. It's exploding and it's imploding at the same time. It's so bad. We've tried to replace it. Our first attempt didn't work out so well. Our do-nothing Congress, mostly the Democrats. It reminds me of an old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't drown it if it doesn't vote for your bill. That's totally a saying. Many people say that saying all the time. But we're going to try again very soon. I haven't read the new bill, but it's terrific. It's terrific. It's fantastic. It's mean, but it's terrific. It's really, truly exceptional. Now, ladies and gentlemen, people think that I need to act more, what's the word, presidential. So right here on this Capitol Steps radio show, I have channeled the ghost of a very famous president. Now, believe me, nobody channels ghosts better than I do, especially ghost presidents.
Is that you, Donald Trump?
President Reagan, if you come back to congratulate me on being so fantastic, being such an incredible president.
No, you knucklehead. It's me, Dick Nixon.
Oh. Are you sure Reagan's not back there somewhere? No offense, President Nixon, but people who are making the comparisons between me and you are wrong. They're wrong. I am not a crook.
Are you kidding? You and I have quite a bit in common. For example, I had problems with Kissinger. You've had problems
with grabbing her. When you're a star, they let you do it.
And I was worried about carpet bombing.
And I was worried about carpet burns. But look, I still don't get it. Okay, we're totally different. Didn't you get in trouble for using Agent Orange?
Donald, I just assume that's what you use on your face. My bad.
Look, Dick, now that I've got you, I do need to ask you. You were very famous for recording your conversations. It's very smart. It's very fantastic. Now, why did you erase those 18 minutes?
Hey, you fired James Comey. You may remember, I fired Archibald Cox. And this is a little-known fact, but when I realized I'd better erase those minutes when Archibald said, Lordy, I hope there are tapes. I really meant to erase all of the tapes, but back then it took longer. The eraser kept breaking off the end of my pencil.
Okay, well, look, I don't see this happening because I am so popular, and I won the Electoral College by 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000 votes. So tell me, what's it like to be impeached?
Well, I never got impeached. As you know, I resigned. But it wasn't so bad. I had lots of time to walk on the beach in a suit. Think about it, Donald. You could golf all the time. Good luck!
Well, it's the Capitol steps with an imagined meeting between Donald Trump and Richard Nixon. The Cap steps are going to be at the Palladium in St. Petersburg this Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. In a few minutes, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. And when we do, we'll be talking about the tragedy in Las Vegas. Reading from the Associated Press this morning, Stephen Paddock had a penchant for guns, high-limit video poker, and real estate deals. His father was a notorious fugitive bank robber. He had a recent live-in girlfriend and two ex-wives and seemed to live a comfortable life in a Nevada retirement community. His life is the subject of a sprawling investigation into what drove him to show up at the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino with at least 10 suitcases filled with guns and opened fire from his 32nd floor suite on a country music festival, killing 59 people and injuring nearly 530. Law enforcement and family members could not explain what would motivate a one-time accountant with no known criminal record to inflict so much carnage. Las Vegas police said he had 23 guns at the hotel, including semi-automatic rifles and 19 at his home, along with thousands of rounds of ammunition. The 64-year-old gunman killed himself in the hotel room before authorities arrived. On the surface, Paddock didn't seem like a typical mass murderer, said Clint Van Zandt, a former FBI hostage negotiator and supervisor in the Bureau's Behavioral Science Unit. Paddock is much older than the typical shooter and was not known to be suffering from mental illness. Van Zandt said, "My challenge is I don't see any of the classic indicators so far that would suggest, okay, he's on the road to either suicide or homicide or both." Nevertheless, his actions suggest that he had planned the attacks for at least a period of days. Some of the rifles had scopes, the sheriff said, and authorities found two gun stocks that could have let him modify weapons to make them fully automatic, according to two U.S. officials briefed by law enforcement, who spoke on condition of anonymity. Van Zandt said he knew what he wanted to do, he knew how he was going to do it, and it doesn't seem like he had any kind of escape plan at all. Asked about a potential motive, Sheriff Joseph Lombardo said he could not get into the mind of a psychopath at this point. That's some of what we know about the tragedy in Las Vegas on Sunday night. Well, we're going to talk about how to prevent something like this and get your take on it. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Buying a semi-automatic weapon is easy to do in this country. They fire one shot at a time every time you squeeze the trigger. But info about converting a semi-automatic weapon is all over the internet. You can buy kits or learn to do it by simply holding your finger in the right spot, and you turn the semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon. Here's one of the many instructional videos on how to make a legally bought semi-automatic rifle into an illegal automatic fire rifle with nothing but a change in the position of the way you put your finger on the rifle.
In the words of Abraham Lincoln, guns are awesome, but they're way better if they bump fire, and that's what leads to true happiness. That's a real quote, look it up. Hey everybody, it's That Gun Guy 45. Today we're gonna be talking about bump firing. What is it? And also, how do you do it? All right, so we're gonna go through those two processes. First of all, bump firing is when you take a semi-automatic gun and you replicate fully automatic fire by bumping the trigger. All right, so I'm gonna hold it with this left hand right here. I'm gonna put my finger in here. I'm not gonna actually pull the trigger with my finger, which is a little bit different than how you normally shoot. I'm actually going to push forward on the gun and keep my trigger finger stationary so that the forward pressure or for the forward motion of the gun pulls the trigger, then it recoils, because that's what guns do when they shoot. It's going to recoil back. I'm going to keep my trigger finger in the same spot but keep forward pressure on it, so the gun is going to bounce and you're just going to bump the trigger. And that's what bump firing is. All right, but we're going to show you how to do it real quick.
Let's do this.
All right, guys, that's bump firing. It's a lot of fun, and especially once you get it down, you can start bump firing other weapons.
Well, that's one of many instructional videos on the internet showing somebody how to turn a semi-automatic gun into a gun that fires automatically using the bump fire method. There's other methods, too. You can buy kits to convert a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon on the internet. Very easy to find. And we're still not sure what method was used, but apparently there was an automatic fire capability on the rifle that this guy, Paddock, used in Las Vegas on Sunday night. So how do you prevent something like this? What can be done? What do you think? Should there be more background checks? Should there be limits on ammunition sales? Should there be a requirement that gun owners buy insurance? Should there be a ban on some types of weapons, the sale of some kinds of weapons? Can you envision our founding fathers envisioning what these weapons are capable of today? Or should we have more weapons on the street? Would more weapons solve this problem? With more people with weapons in Las Vegas, could they have shot back and killed the person 400 yards away? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's listen to this controversy comes up all the time. And there have been many, many mass shootings in this country. And back in 2013, there was a debate about mass shootings. And this is a piece from Comedy Central where John Oliver was working for Jon Stewart on Comedy Central. And they were looking at the example of Australia. Australia has reduced its gun death rate and also reduced the rate of mass killings using guns in Australia. And some people think that the U.S. should follow Australia's plan, and that is to outlaw the sale of some kinds of rifles. Others disagree. So here's John Oliver from the Comedy Central show 4 years ago discussing Australia's approach to guns.
We continue tonight our series from Australia. John Oliver learned that following a mass shooting in Australia, the country introduced gun control, and it worked. So how can America take this valuable lesson and ignore it? John Oliver finds out in this, our final installment.
Previously, I went to Australia, where I learned that in 1996, their government enacted sweeping gun control laws. The result? Reduced gun violence and zero mass shootings. So are there any lessons for America here? Virginia gun advocate Philip Van Cleve has a clear answer.
We're not Australia. It's a very different culture. Different people, different everything.
Right, there's no similarity with Australia. Australia is a former British colony with a wild frontier that was tamed by brave men who also wiped out almost an entire indigenous population. And we are not similar to that. Right?
Right.
Right, because unlike Australia, we Americans know when the guns are taken away, tyranny inevitably follows.
The Founding Fathers knew that governments tend to grow beyond their means. And in America, we're stepping in the direction of a police state.
Is that really happening, Philip, or is that some kind of crazy paranoia?
We have police. They're now wearing ninja suits, if you will. I mean, you don't even know they're police necessarily. They got the black masks on and everything.
So it really isn't crazy paranoia. You're justifiably frightened about ninja police.
Yeah, ninja police, yes.
Yeah, ninja police.
Yes, yeah.
Sadly, without access to semi-automatic firearms, Australians wouldn't know a thing about real freedom.
Bloody oath, we're free. We just sit here doing whatever we want. Everybody's just hanging out and having a good time.
People don't have the same concerns anymore about getting gunned down when they're at a tourist resort.
Yeah, but was that worth it?
Yes.
Was it worth giving up your fundamental freedoms just to not get shot in a gun massacre?
What are you talking about?
Australians must now live in this well-regulated nightmare because of ex-politicians like Rob Borbidge, who smugly thinks that his country has something to teach us.
I hope that they would have a look at what has happened here.
Why would people want to live like this?
Because they might want a safer society to live in.
But it's pointless for us to study the Australian experience because their fear of gun control back then has no parallels with ours.
I mean, what kind of things were you hearing when you suggested gun control?
that government was becoming a dictatorship.
All right, that's one.
We're told that people would not have the right to defend their property and their families.
Okay, that's definitely two.
The democracy is at stake somehow if government decides there should be a background check.
Yeah, all right.
Three. We're about to be invaded, yes, by the Indonesians.
That's completely different. No one in America is afraid of Indonesians. Are they afraid of Mexicans and Muslims coming? Maybe? Sure, he claims Australians were angry, but where is the proof?
People's rights are being taken away from them.
And I'm not going to give up any guns that they're going to take off me. Are you going to give yours up?
OK, there it is. But how do those angry rural conservatives feel now?
My immediate reaction was that it was an overreaction. But as time went on, the regulations were quite manageable.
So, hold on. You didn't want to give up your high-powered gun?
No, but I felt as if I had a bit of a duty to the rest of our society.
And if you think that sounds bad crazy, this effective gun control was enacted by conservative politicians against the will of their own base.
There's no other way!
But our politicians are different. They know that
gun control doesn't work.
Or even if it does,
it takes a long time.
And to be fair, John Howard and his Deputy Prime Minister Tim Fisher have had since 1996 to enact their sweeping reforms.
It took less than 3.5 months.
What? What?
What? Arthur Massacre was on the 28th of April 1996.
Yep.
In a 12-week period shortly following that, bulk of legislation was devised, drafted, debated, and implemented.
But it doesn't work.
Zero massacres since 1996.
Yeah, you keep saying that, but gun control doesn't work, so... My head was spinning. I had to clear it the traditional Aussie way.
Beer.
No, not that way. A walkabout.
The Second Amendment is sacrosanct.
Political suicide.
Zero massacres since 1996.
From my cold, my dead hand.
Ninja police.
It's a blue banana.
So hungry.
After 3 days in the bush with a guy in a kangaroo suit, it became clear what the real issue with gun control in America is. If guns aren't the problem, Philip, what is the problem?
People.
People are the problem.
Yes.
Do you know what? After spending this amount of time with you, Philip, I'm starting to believe that that's partially true.
Good.
Good.
Well, I'm glad you understand it. People are the problem.
Yeah, that is becoming just painfully obvious. After investigating the issue on opposite sides of the earth, I discovered that if Americans really do want gun control, there is actually one thing they can do to get it. Move to Australia.
Well, that was a segment from 2013 on the Comedy Central show with Jon Stewart, The Daily Show. And that was John Oliver going to Australia, looking at what's happened since Australia banned automatic and semi-automatic weapons. In the years since they did that in 1996, it transformed Australia, and gun deaths are down, and there hasn't been a single mass shooting since 1996. In Australia, there was an average of about one every 18 months, or almost one every year in Australia in the 15 or so years before that. Well, let's take some phone calls. What do you think should be done to reduce gun violence in the U.S.? Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And Laura's in St. Pete Beach. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hi. I feel that it should be enacted that people who want guns should have to take a test and have a permit like a driver's license.
Treat it like a car.
Yes, because it's a dangerous weapon.
Should they have insurance?
Yes, definitely.
Insurance over the gun? Okay.
And I also am concerned because right now the concealed and carry reciprocity legislation is going on. Discussions are going on in Washington. And I think that people who are opposed should let them, their Congress people know about that.
It's interesting that Nevada is an open carry state, so people have the right to open carry in Nevada. But that didn't seem to stop what happened on Sunday.
That's true.
All right, Laura, thanks. Thanks for your ideas. Thanks for kicking off the show. All right. So there's some ideas. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Bo in Clearwater. Hi, Bo. What do you think?
I'm just beside myself as far as the violence in this country. And growing up in the Midwest, I grew up around guns. My grandfathers had guns, but they had guns simply for hunting, just to put food on the table. Nowadays, everybody's able to get an AR-15 or an SKS, everybody's loaded with guns, but just like you said, it didn't seem to help take down this man in Nevada. This country's too far gone. This country's too far gone as far as with the guns. We're really wasting our breath even talking about it because we're too far gone. Nothing's going to change. We don't have a democracy in this country. We have a president who was voted in with through the Electoral College, not through the popular vote. This country is too far gone, and all I can do is go into midday mass right now and pray. That's it.
All right, Bo, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. I hope the mass gives you some comfort and solace. Ernie writes this. This is in response to the John Stewart episode you just played. John Oliver should go back to Britain. And Ernie writes that John Oliver is a sniveling twit. So that's Ernie in Port Richey and what he thinks. What do you think? Is calling names really something that advances the conversation? Jeff writes this, why do you use left? He's saying this to me. Why do you use leftist comedians like John Oliver in comedy skits instead of government officials and actual statistics? And secondly, what convinces anyone that criminals will obey gun laws while breaking all the other laws, writes Jeff. We've done a lot of interviews over the years, and I'll do that again, Jeff. We've done a lot of interviews with people bringing statistics on. We've had several debates here on WMNF. I'd like to change it up a little bit, but I will go back and bring on more experts if that's what you'd like, because I do like to hear from people who are knowledgeable, who have studied these issues. You can actually go on our website and look at some of the many, many interviews we've done over the years and debates we've done over the years about guns. Our website is WMNF.org. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Dan in Tampa. Dan, what do you think is the way to reduce gun violence in the U.S.?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Obviously, to enact some gun control, people can have guns, but automatic guns like this, again, this instance proves how lethal and how many people are going to die from it and hurt. There was an opinion piece in Fox News today with somebody with some authority saying that Europe has about the same gun violence as the U.S. and Europe has gun control. Has anybody read it? Is there any debunking that? Is there any truth to that? That's just a question I have.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. I haven't read that, but I know we've got a lot of listeners from Europe who live here part-time, and some people actually live in Europe and listen online. So let's ask them, is the gun horror show as bad in places like England and France and Denmark and Italy and Spain? Is it bad in those countries as it is in this country? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Steve, who's in Tampa. Steve, you're on. What would you like to say about reducing gun violence?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was thinking, obviously, we need to distinguish amongst the types of weapons, and these high-powered automatic weapons are completely different than, you know, a hunting rifle. And so I was thinking if there could be some way to put some liability on the manufacturers of these weapons. I mean, just imagine if you're the company that manufactured the weapon that was used in Las Vegas, and the people that were injured or killed by that weapon would have a claim against your company, you wouldn't be in business very long. You wouldn't be selling those weapons.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot, is that the gun manufacturers right now are protected from lawsuits, but I've heard a lot of people argue that if they weren't protected from lawsuits, they would at least be very, very careful about who they sell these weapons to, and some people think that they would get out of the business entirely. What do you think about selling kits that for 50 bucks or so can take a semi-automatic weapon and turn it into an automatic weapon? Do you think those should be legal?
No, I don't think there's anybody that should own an automatic weapon in the United States.
All
and
right.
I think those people should be held liable too.
Yeah, Steve, I think lawsuits are one way that we could reduce the violence. I think you're right. Steve, thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right, so let's go to Peter in Clearwater. Hi, Peter, you're on M&F. What would you like to say?
How do we
reduce gun violence?
Can you hear me all right? I'm calling from speaker in my car.
I can hear you.
Great. I think this is, it is a gun problem, but I think primarily we're going to find out that this is a pharmaceutical problem. Every one of these mass shooters that I've read about has been on some type of serotonin inhibitor, and I think when the facts come out on this guy, I mean, you've got a 64-year-old guy who's got no history of violence, no history of gun ownership, no history of political affiliation, and all of a sudden he quote-unquote snaps. That sounds like a classic case of somebody being put on a serotonin inhibitor and having a chemical imbalance due to a pharmaceutical drug. And I think the best way to curb these mass shootings is to severely curb the use of these drugs.
Well, Peter, I think that question's got to be asked, and let's hope we get the autopsy results soon. I think that question is an important one. We'll see whether or not you're on the right track.
All right, thank you.
All right, Peter, thank you. 813-239-9663. But that doesn't address the issue of gun violence, because I think some people are helped by some of the pharmaceuticals that are out there. Would you ban all of these pharmaceuticals in order to try to stop gun violence? Is that the right way to do it? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Chuck, who's in Sarasota. Chuck, you're on 88.5 FM. What would you like to say?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to concentrate on assault rifles, and in particular, the ability to change an assault rifle from a semi to an automatic. I'm making an assumption, or I'm not a gun owner. I'm making an assumption that there are certain semi-automatics that would be impossible to do. I don't know if that's true or not. But why not restrict the manufacturers of the semi-automatics from not having them have the ability to convert to an automatic weapon? And then my second question I have, when somebody goes for I live in Florida, so I don't think we need a license in particular to own a gun. But is there a database for everybody who owns a semi-automatic rifle, and then a sidebar, ones that are convertible into automatic?
No,
I don't know.
There is no computerized database.
Yeah, and I asked the question, shouldn't there be?
Well,
I heard that Australia conversation when it was first aired a few years ago, and I believe Australia gave people a certain amount of money, I don't know if it was $500 or $1,000, for their weapon to turn it in. And even though, you know, it was probably worth more or less, whatever. But my goal is just to get semi-automatic assault rifles off the street.
All right, Chuck, those are interesting ideas. Thanks a lot. Thanks for making them.
Thank you.
All right. And they were paid a fair price for their semi-automatic and automatic rifles when they turned them in Australia. I'm going to look at some of these emails here. A bunch of emails have come in, and we're talking about how to reduce gun violence in the U.S. and taking your phone calls. Here's an email that says, we need to address mental health issues, not gun issues. That's somebody anonymous from the 727 area code. I'm going to try to just give everybody at least one shot of answering this question. Here's somebody who's anonymous from the 727 area code who says the same people that ask for statistics never listen to them anyway. That's Bill's email from Newport Richie. Bill, thank you for that. Let's go back to the phones, and you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is Tina in Tampa. Tina, how should we proceed reducing gun violence in the U.S.?
Hi, Rob. Well, I think three things. One, a ban on assault weapons, just an outright ban, period. And then I agree with the one, a previous caller, about let the manufacturers be held liable. I don't see why they should be protected from lawsuits. I mean, you look at what happened with the tobacco industry when they were sued. That has all but, you know, gone away. So I think they should be held accountable. And three, education. I mean, we've got this Wild West mentality in this country that it's cool to be slinging around your gun and, you know, pry it from my, you know, cold dead fingers. I mean, that kind of thing, it needs to be, you know, turned around. And it's going to start, it's going to have to start with in the schools, with very young children. That's just, you know, my take on it.
All right, Tina. Tina, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Albert and Ruskin. Albert, how should we proceed to reduce gun violence?
Bob, I don't think it's possible. The people of this country, you know, we just can't do that. You know me. I have my firearms. I've never committed a crime. I'm a good soldier. I'm a good citizen. And for people to say, well, let's ban this weapon, you just criminalize me, who's never committed a crime.
Yeah, but Albert, let me throw it back at you. You're just like that guy in Las Vegas. He never committed a crime either, and then suddenly he snapped. And we don't know in the future what your mental health position is going to be. You may have bought those weapons in perfect mental health, but who knows how you're going to be a year from now or 2 years from now. And isn't it just better for society that we have fewer of these mass shootings?
Well, in the scheme of things, violent crime is one half of what it was in 2000. In the last three centuries, the odds of you dying a violent death have dropped precipitously.
Right, but the number of mass shootings is up. The number of mass shootings, there are crazier people out there roaming the streets every day. So how do you prevent that?
Well, that's the whole thing. You can't. And that's why I'm saying you can't prevent the crazy.
So how did Australia, Australia has had no mass shootings since 1996. How did they do it?
That's Australia. We're not Australians. We're Americans.
Well, and as John Oliver said, you know, we were both founded the same way. White settlers coming into a country populated by indigenous people, a former British colony, and we're just like Australia.
No, we're not just like
Australia. Okay, how are we not like Australia?
Well, our founding fathers had a very different idea of what the United States should be.
You don't think Australians believe in freedom?
I'm sure they do. But not like we do. It's a different thing. We're not Australians. The founding fathers wanted us to be able to protect ourselves from a tyrannical government.
And now, that's what the Australians said.
They couldn't envision what we've developed, but I think that if they were here today, they'd say, you know what, we still want you to be able to protect yourself from a tyrannical government. Now, we can argue if governments become tyrannical.
Well, they wanted us to have a well-regulated militia. They said nothing about a tyrannical government. And so they wanted us to have people who are part of a well-regulated militia. You know, it's interesting that when the National Rifle Association built its headquarters, the Second Amendment has this preamble to it. That's part of the amendment. But when they built the headquarters of the NRA, they didn't put that part, a well-regulated militia, on the top of their building. And, you know, I just think that you got to take the amendment as a whole. You can't pick and choose, the words of the amendment that you like and then leave out the ones that you don't like.
The Supreme Court is different on that, hasn't it?
Well, the Supreme Court is populated by conservatives. It could change, if more moderate members join the Supreme Court. But you're right. Right now that we have a conservative Supreme Court, you got to remember that conservative-dominated Supreme Courts 20 years ago, like the Burger Court, would never have agreed with the Heller decision. And Scalia was able to push that through. But I think more moderate Republicans would take a look at what Heller says and say that's outrageous.
Maybe so.
All right, Albert, thanks a lot. Thank you, Albert. Thank you for calling in. It's great to hear from you. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. And We'll play those comments back soon in about 7 days. We're going to do the fund drive next week. Remember that if you make a donation right now, you're actually helping to shorten the fund drive a little bit. There'll be a little bit less asking for money on the air in the next few days if you make your donation now to WMNF.org. Hey, thanks a lot for listening. This is Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Your hero, Mark Bureau, is coming up next. Jan Simpson's been our phone producer. This is WMNF Tampa. Here's the latest news.